Tonight's shiur is in Parshas Bereishis, actually starting a new type of shiur. Till now we've been using a source from Rav Shlomo Levinstein Shlita. Now I decided to go on to Rav Yitzhak Zilberstein Shiabari Shlita, Sefer Barchi Nafshi. So most of the Divrei Torah will come from this svarim. Okay, the Sefer starts off. Bereishis bara Elokim es haShemayim veHaaretz. Rashi says, "Ein mikra zeh omer ela darsheni." Kemo shamru Chazal bishvil haTorah shenikra Bereishis darko v'chulei. That the Torah is the word Bereishis is darshan to be the beginning, as the Bereishis darko. So he points out that whatever happens in the world all comes from the koach of the Torah. Brings the Yermaisa with Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that there was a group of Askanim from a... They lived in a yeshuv in the Merkaz Haaretz, and they didn't have too much Torah there, and they wanted to mechazik the Torah. It's one of the main things they needed. They didn't have was a Talmud Torah, cheder for the children. So they approached the area, the city hall, and they asked for an area to build a cheder, whatever. But since they were not very religious, putting it mildly, so they were against the idea. They weren't giving him a place to put the cheder, anything, nothing. They weren't giving him funds. So they didn't know what to do, because what's a town without a cheder? You know? So they went to Chaim Kanievsky and they asked him, so he says, well, do you have any options whatsoever? What can you? He says, well, the story is like this, they said. The only thing we could do is, we could take a trailer, caravan, as they call them, take a trailer, and plop it down in one of the areas in the city that belong to the city, and start a cheder there. So he said, well, what would be the repercussions? So he said, well, very simple. Probably the next day, they're going to come with a huge crane, take away our caravan, and slap us with a very steep fine. So Rav Chaim asked them, do you have any other options? Is this it? They said, that's basically it. If not that, there's no cheder. So he said, if that's the case, you can go ahead and do it. So they said, well, what about the city? What's going to be? So he said, don't worry, nobody will be able to do anything to you. Said, why not? Just Gemara and Baba Basra, Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph, says over there, Rabbi Shua ben Gamla was mesakein that every town should have a cheder, should have a Rebbe teach the children, whatever, every city, every town. And therefore, Rabbi Shua ben Gamla made a takana, the city can't go against his takana. So they listen, and they ordered a caravan, they plopped it down as was planned, and exactly as they thought happened, next day a huge crane came from the city to take away the caravan. So they everybody's gathering around watching this crane approach the caravan, and they said, well, here it goes, we knew this was going to happen. And they set up the crane, and this big arm, this big arm comes down to pick up the caravan. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, the arm breaks and comes crashing down. The crane just breaks right on the spot. So they couldn't understand it, like that never happened before, but okay. So they called in a bigger crane, a stronger crane, to do the job. So it came, and the big arm came ready to take the caravan. Out of the blue, the arm broke, came crashing down, second time in a row. Well, by now they saw that there's a arm of Hashem, pun intended, over here, and they called the area, the company. They said, look, we sent two cranes, they both out of nowhere, never happened to us, broke. So they said, okay, so leave them alone. And they left them alone. They had the cheder there, and it wasn't too long where they even gave them the actual ishurim to have the cheder operate illegally. Okay. And the pasuk v'yer v'yevokir yom revi brings a maisa that once a man came to the chazanish and he was totally broken. Chazanish, what's wrong? So he says, Rebbe, he says, I wasn't feeling well. He says, I went to the doctor. They decided to do some tests. And they found I have some infection in my body. And the doctors give me 4 days to live. 4 days. That's it. So he says, how can I be broken? You know, he starts crying and crying. He says, there may be 4 days. What should I do? 4 days to live. So the Chazon Ish puts his arm around him, gives him a hug, says, you know, comfort him a little bit. And he says, here, he pulls out a Chumash Bereishis, he opens it up, and he says, let's learn a little bit of Chumash. So he says, shows him the first day of creation, right? Hashem created the light, the light, the dark, etc. Second day of creation, Viv Abdil, etc. Third day of creation, fourth day of creation. And he said to the man, look, 4 days, we went through 4 days of creation. Look at all the tremendous things Hashem made out of nothing in 4 days. That's 4 days he created all these things, the sun, the moon, the stars, right? So he said, look, if Hashem could create all these things in 4 days, so he can certainly create a medicine for you to cure you in 4 days. He says, all you got to do, he says, is daven. He says, you have to daven with all your heart. He says, the Shari Tefillah was not locked up. And if a person, especially a chola who's himself sick, davens for himself, there's no limit what you can accomplish. So you have to daven from the bottom of your heart. You'll see, if Hashem created the world, he can create a trufa. Okay? So the guy goes home, he cries, davens to Hashem. Sure enough, all of a sudden, he gets a notice that a nace happened. What? They, in America, came up with this new drug, which is supposed to combat that infection that he has. And it's a brand new drug. They haven't yet, you know, come out with it. It's just in the experimental stage. But they, you know, they offered it to him, and you know, what he got to lose, you know, he's anyways doesn't have too many hours left in this world. So they gave him this drug as a trial, and it was exactly perfectly, you know, designed for him, and it cured his infection, and a few days later he was up and about like nothing ever happened. There's once a Rav of a Haredi kehila here that he got word that his wife Olenu has a machala. So the Rav went to Rav Nissen Karelitz Shlita and he asked him if the following question: is it kedai to mifarsem, like to tell the kehila, make it public, what's the sickness of his wife? Idea being, he figured that maybe if, you know, more people know about it, so people daven more, etc., maybe it's a good thing that people should know, or maybe not, maybe it's better to keep it quiet more. So Nissim told him something very interesting. He said not to publicize it. He says, why? He says, first of all, she has such a terrible machala, that al piteva, naturally speaking, you know, it's got no hope. And so people aren't gonna, you know, they're not gonna daven anyways, because they're gonna just give up hope. But what's worse, he says, is that once you make it known, so then it's a known thing that she has. Everybody knows about it. So in order for there to be a cure, it's much harder. Why? Because then you need mamasha, you're gonna need a nace. It needs a nace to cure her. And since once it's kavua, this is what she has, so then she's going to need this nace. It's very hard. Hashem doesn't like to do nisi. So if you keep it quiet, people don't know about it, so it's not yet, you know, known, this thing, so it's much easier to cure. So he took the advice of Nisim and told his wife, and also keep it quiet. And sure enough, she kept it totally quiet, to the degree that she didn't even tell her own mother and what she had. And every time her mother came to visit, she's smiling, whatever, didn't tell her that she has a machala. And Baruch Hashem, she saw results. She was able to, with the doctors, give her also much time, but she lived for 5 years after that. She kept it quiet. So it's interesting, as it brought to mind, once I took my son Chaim to get a bracha from Rav David Abu Chatzera in Nahariya. So I told him, you know, I'd like the bracha of my son. So I said, what's the story? So I said, well, he has a retardation or whatever. You know, I said, I'm talking in Hebrew, whatever. So he lifts up his finger at me, like as if to, you know, warn me. He says, no, he doesn't have retardation. And I'm like, okay. And I said, fine. And I, you know, I said, but, you know, he goes, no, he doesn't have. Okay. And I turned around and left. That was it. So I never understood, like, what was he, you know. So basically, I think this explains it, you know, the Vor. You know, he was like, he says, you know, once you're Koveya, that this is it, he has it. So now, in order to cure it, you need a Nase, Nase Nigla, and Hashem doesn't like to do Nisim. So therefore, he was like, Koveya, no, he doesn't have it. Not there, so forget about it. And therefore, it's in order to be a cure. It's more in the realm of possibility, because now it's not a getter as a great and nace as it was. I think that's a hesbir in that experience. Okay, pasuk says Nase Adam. Rashi brings the famous question: what's Nase Adam? Hashem says, "Let us make man." What do you mean, "Let us"? Who's us? And Rashi answers, the us is Hashem asked the Malachim, he took Eitzah from them, meaning he wanted to teach, he were being taught Derech Eretz, Anava, that even somebody great should still ask advice from somebody lesser than he. So Hashem, to teach this, he said, let us make man, ask Elu, as if he was asking the angels, etc. So the Rashi's explaining that answering Lechura, the problem here, right? By saying Nase Adam, you have the danger of Apikorsim saying, hey, look, there's more than one God, Chas V'Shalom, right? So Nase us make man. Looks like Hashem's talking to other gods. And you're giving a peptach, an opening for Apikorsim to say things. So, to answer this, Rashi says, yeah, but you want to teach Anava and Derech Eretz. So, Rav Shach Zatzal asked, he says, but it doesn't really take care of the problem. Good, you're teaching Midas Derech Eretz, and very nice. Hashem said this to show that you should ask advice from those lesser than you. But what about the Apikorsim? You still got the problem. Hashem wanted to teach this, but you still have the problem with the Apikorsim. So he said, the answer, he says, you don't have the problem with Apikorsim. So why? He said, because if once you're teaching Midas and Derech Eretz, so once a person learns this, and he says, I see, a person has to have Derech Eretz and Midos, then mainly he's not going to be an Apikoris. Because what's an Apikoris? A person just goes his own ways and thinks has with his own ideas, but a person has Midos Derech Eretz, so he'll be willing to open up his ears and listen to other people. And when people tell him, no, there's a God in this world, and there's divine, you know, retribution, etc., so a person won't be an Apikoris anymore. So therefore, Hashem said, no problem. I have no problem getting rid of the problem of the Apikorsim. I'll teach Midas and Derech Eretz, and there won't be Apikorsim. Shach said. It's a story about an Avreich, and he was having problems Parnassa-wise. So he had two sets of twins. So he decided to make some parnasa. They decided to open up a gun, like a kindergarten, in their house. They have like a little courtyard in there where they live, and they decided they make open up a, you know, have kids taking care of kids and make some parnasa that way. So the problem was that they had to get permission from the people in the area, you know, because there's a certain amount of noise and, you know, with kids playing around outside. So they had to get an okay from the tenants in the area. Okay, so Baruch Hashem's things seem to go well. They asked this one, that one, all the people, and everybody said it's okay by them. Wonderful. So they started to get things going to the and open up the gun. Until all of a sudden one day, one of the people, the neighbors, said, we want to rescind our authorization. We want to take it back. We don't want the gun now. So they said, oh, they couldn't believe it. You know, they almost had it, and then that's why. So he said, why? What's wrong? You know. So he said, listen, I'll tell you why. Two reasons. First of all, my wife, she suffers from high blood pressure. And I'm afraid if you open this gun, my wife's going to, you know, it's going to be hard for her. The noise, whatever, is going to be not good for her health. That's number one. Says, and number two, says, I have, unfortunately, three kids that went off to derech. And if you're going to, you know, open up a gun, you're a Haredi guy, a Vreich, you know, you're going to open up this gun. And my kids are going to say, yeah, you see these Haredim, you see they open up, they don't care about our mother, you know, she has high blood pressure, and you see these Haredim, man, there's going to be a chel shem. I'm trying so hard to be machzer them l'tshuva, it's just going to ruin everything. So that's why I don't want to give the issue. Okay, he heard, but Lamaisa, he wants to open his gun, he needs this for his parnasa. So he decided to go to ask a shayla. So he went to, I didn't say who, but a certain rav, and he asked him, does this guy have a right to take with you know, rescind his okay? So Rav said, listen, halachically, no. He says that once he said okay, he was, that's like a neder, and even therefore by thought, if he's a neder is chal in this case, and he can't take it back. A neder is a neder, and so he says, go, okay, thank you. So he goes back to the guy, and he says, I spoke to a rav, and the rav said, you can't take it back. So he goes, do you mind if I speak to that rav? He says, sure, no problem. So he told him what it was, whatever, and the guy went to the rav. So the rav told him the psak, whatever, and the guy wasn't overly enthused about it. So the rav took out a bottle of wine, and he says, listen, if you're willing to mevater, and you're willing to let this Avreich open up the gun, he says, I'm giving you this bottle of wine, and I'm giving you a bracha, that you should dance at the chasana of your three children that are after derech, they should be chozer b'tshuva, and you should dance at their chasana. And this wine will be poured at their chasana. Ah, well, the bracha like that, you know. So he took the bottle of wine, he gave his okay, they opened up the gun, and the Savreich came back to the Rav a while later, and he said, tell the Rav that the bottle of wine was used three times, all the three sons were chozer b'tshuva, and they're all, he danced at their chasanas. The union of good midos and their result. Another maisa, there was in Ramat Elchanan, Bnei Brach, was a Talmud Chacham, that he said that he was once, he visited a friend of his acquaintance, that was also a Talmud Chacham. And a guy who's normally a very happy-go-lucky guy with a smile on his face, you know, he says, but I went to visit him, and it was very strange, but he looked very sad. And this guy never looks sad. He always looks, you know, always happy-go-lucky. And here he is with this big frown on his face. Okay, I didn't say anything at the time, but I saw it was very strange. It was just not like him. So the next day in shul, after shul, I approached him. I said, you know, I don't mean to be, you know, nosy or anything, but, you know, I always know you as such a, you know, happy guy. And yesterday I was by your house. I saw, you know, you feel so sad. Well, you know, what's wrong? What's going on? So he told him something very interesting. He says, you know what? He says, I'll tell you the truth. He says, I was no reason why I shouldn't have been happy. The reason why I was sad was not for me, it was for my wife. So what do you mean? He says, my wife, certain things happened to her, whatever, in the recent future, recent past, and she was very sad. And I was thinking, how can I cheer up my wife? I was thinking, you know, going on, whatever I say, you're just not gonna do it. So I had an idea. What did I do? I decided I was going to put on a show. And I was going to act sad myself. You know, I was going to act sad. Meaning what? So my wife, I knew, if she sees me being, you know, with a sad face, what is she going to want to do? Cheer me up. Now, how do you cheer up someone? You can't cheer somebody up with a sad face. It's not going to work. So in order for her to cheer me up, she's going to have to, you know, put on a smile, whatever, to try to cheer me up. And that, once she starts smiling a little bit, that'll cheer her up. So And exactly then, when I was putting on the show, you know, you walked in, so I couldn't, you know, all of a sudden smile, because I would, you know, ruin everything. So that's why, when you came yesterday, I continued on with my frowning face, with all the purpose of trying to cheer up my wife, which said Baruch Hashem worked in you. So it says, in the side, he said, you know, you wonder, you know, how old was this guy that, you know, was putting on the show, cheering up his wife? You say, okay, you think, you know, just got married, whatever. He says, no, he says, this guy, he's around 65 years old. He's married for 43 years, okay? But even married after 43 years, he still, you know, wants to make sure his wife is happy and tries to think of all these ways of doing it. And nothing still works on his marriage 43 years later. With the seventh day of creation, this is Vayishbos Vayom HaShvi, Hashem rested. So one of the greatest nisyonos that the Jewish people had in the last generation in America was Shabbos. Right? They came, people in those days, it was very hard. Everybody had to work on Shabbos, and it was very hard to keep a job. And many, many people used to, you know, work for 6 days, then came Shabbos, and they had to lose their job, trying to find another job, and one every week another job, because they only kept it until Shabbos, and very, very difficult. And unfortunately, many Yidden couldn't take the pressure, and they ended up being Mechal Shabbos in order to make a living. Being Santa Maisa, the family called the Feldman, Shpachat Feldman, they live in Borough Park. So they're grandfather of the mishpacha. They are his name is Rav Meir Feldman. Nowadays, they're the children of his, you know, descendants are all Talmidei Chachamim living here in America, whatever. But the grandfather Rav Meir Feldman, he was a student of the Chafetz Chaim. We learned by the Chafetz Chaim in Raden, the Chafetz Chaim, and so he tells over the following. He says, when I, just before I got married, so I was leaving the yeshiva, you know, after about to get married, so I, of course, say goodbye to the Chafetz Chaim, want to get a bracha from him. So I told him, Rabbi, you know, I'm leaving, going to get married now, and like a bracha. So the Chafetz Chaim said, okay, I'll give you a bracha under one condition. I said, what's that? He says, you promise me you're going to keep Shabbos. He says, what? Going to keep Shabbos? Why would the Rebbe choshet I'm not going to keep Shabbos? You know, I'm the top bacher in yeshiva, you know, I'm not going to keep Shabbos. I have to promise I'm going to keep Shabbos. Of course I'm going to keep Shabbos. What are you? So Chai says, okay, fine, but you see, are you going to shake on it? Can you give me give me your hand? He says, Rebbe, I'll give you my hand, shake your hand, a promise that I'm going to keep Shabbos. Of course I'm going to keep Shabbos. He says, listen, you want the bracha? You have to shake my hand. Promise me to shake, handshake. He said, fine. So he gives him his hand, shakes his hand, fine, I promise I'm going to keep Shabbos. Okay. So then Chafetz Chaim gave him a nice bracha, and that was that. Okay. So what happened? This was before the war, but then the war broke out, the Holocaust. And Sir Meir Feldman was married with 4 kids. Miraculously, we say, what happened? This point, they weren't letting Jews, you know, leave. But his Goyish neighbor presented him with visas for him, his wife, and his 4 children to leave. Mamish by Nace. And he came to America. So as we said, in this time in America, it was very hard to Yiddishkeit was at a low, and it was very hard to keep Shabbos. And sure enough, he found a job, and it was doing okay. He was able to, you know, not work on Shabbos, which he was very, of course, thankful for, and he had a parnasa. But before too long, one day the boss comes in, and he says, "Listen, till now I allowed you to be off on Saturday, but now you got to work." So he says, "No, I can't work on Saturday. I'm sorry, I can't." He says, "Listen, if you're not gonna, you can't. You have to leave. I'm sorry." So he pleaded with him, "No, please." He says, "No, either you work on Saturday or goodbye." So Ramirez said, "Listen, okay, so goodbye. I can't work. Finished." So that was it. He left the job. came home and told his wife, out of the blue, boss came up to me after work, and I said, no, and that's it, I'm out of a job. So he looked for this, another, he couldn't come up with anything. For sure not a job that, allowed him to be off on Shabbat. And so the little money he had dwindled, and he was left with nothing. And he had, no food in the house. The kids are crying, need food, the wife is crying, and what was he going to do? So he was. His wife said, "Believe it or not, she said you got to go work on Shabbos." She says, "I'm sorry." She says, "We got no food in the house. What are you going to do? You got to work." So he couldn't believe it. Here's a religious woman, but we can't understand these yonos. But and the kids are crying, no food. She said, "You got to go work." So he said, "No, chas v'shalom." Anyways, it got to a point where he himself said, "It's impossible." So he said, I'm going back to the factory and I'm going to ask for my job back and I'll just have to work on Shabbos. So he said, he tells the story, I got into the train and making my way to the factory to ask for my job back. As I'm sitting there in the train, all of a sudden came back to me the Maisa with the Chafetz Chaim. And he remembered how he promised the Chafetz Chaim, how Chafetz Chaim says you have to shake my hand that you're not going to, that you're going to keep Shabbos. And it hit him. I said, don't believe it, And I see the Ruach HaKodesh, He knew this was going to happen. So he says, how can I go to work after I promised the Chafetz Chaim with a handshake that I'm not going to mechal Shabbos? He says, I can't do this. So he got off the train, took the train in the other direction, back home. And he told his wife, he says, I can't. I remembered that I promised the Chafetz Chaim. He says, okay, promise is a promise. We have to look. We just have to trust in Hashem. So 2 hours later, after he was home, got home, 2 hours later, there's a knock on the door. Opens the door. Who is there? His boss. His old boss, So he's like shocked. And the boss has this big smile on his face. So that's strange. First of all, what is he doing here? Secondly, why is he smiling? So he says, please come in or whatever. He says, well, what's going on? So the boss says, listen, I want to explain something to you. He says, do you think I would really fire you, because you didn't, you weren't going to work on Saturday? He said, come on, you're my best worker and everything. He says, what happened? He says, I'll tell you what happened. He says, I have a partner in the business. So one day we're having this discussion, and we're talking about the Jews and this and that, And we're talking about the Jews keeping their, their holy day, the Sabbath, and this and that. And my partner said that those Jews, they say they're Sabbath, but they're never willing to be Moser Nefesh, for their Sabbath. And I said, not true. I said, I have a worker here, Feldman, and I'm sure he would be Moser Nefesh for Shabbos. He didn't use the word Moser Nefesh, but whatever. So my partner said, no. So he said, okay. He says, let's make a bet. Let's make a bet. He says, put a lot of money down. And he said, you fire him and make him work. I'm sorry. He said, no, whatever, and fire him and see what, if he's gonna stand up to it or not. So he goes, okay, you'll see. So that's when I came to you, and I didn't really plan. This was all, I just wanted to make my money, So I came to you and told you you're fired out or whatever, you don't work a job, and you left. So, my partner said, yeah, wait, tomorrow he's going to come to you back with a job. You'll see, whatever. Day came, next day, whatever. And sure enough, that is, you didn't show up. You didn't ask for your job back. You said you weren't going to work on everything, work on Shabbos. So I just came to tell you what happened. And first of all, here, he handed in an envelope. And what's this? He opens it up, and it's like a lot of money. And there he goes, this is the bet money. So my partner paid me, and I decided to give it to you. My main point was not the money. I just wanted to prove the point, And I won the bet, so here, you take the money, number one. Number two, like I said, you can have your job back. And number three, I see you're such a devout, individual, willing to stand by his principles. So not only am I giving you a job back, I'm going to give you a more chashuv position in the company, and I'm going to give you, which comes with a nice raise as well. So the Nivu of the Chafetz Chaim. Okay. Time here. Okay. says in the pasuk, "Vayitzav Hashem Elokim ala Adam lemor mikol etz hagan achol tochel." So Hashem said, he commanded Adam, and he says, told him from all the trees in the garden you can eat from, but from the tree of the Eitz Hadas, Tovara, that you're not allowed to eat from, and if you're going to die. So he brings from the Gaon Mislotsk, he has a very simple question. He says, why do you need the first part of the pasuk? Well, you know, why did Hashem, he commanded Adam saying, you can eat from all the trees, but not from the... Why do you have to tell him you can eat from all the trees? Why do you need that introduction? He should have just said, Adam, don't eat from the tree of Das. Why do you first have to tell him, from all the trees you can eat, don't eat from the tree? So he says, we learn from here a lesson in Chinuch. He says, when you're going to tell your kids to do not to do something, first start off with something that's mutter. In other words, one of the greatest, you know, problems with their parents is they always, you know, negative, they're always, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. All the kid hears is negative. I once heard from a speaker on chinuch or whatever, and he told a couple, they had a problem with the chinuch or whatever, so he told them to take a tape recorder in those days, and you know, hide it, and just leave it on around in your kitchen area or whatever, and in the morning, whatever, and record what goes on in the morning, whatever. So they did that. So then they brought it into the Rav, and they said, okay, now let's play it back. And they heard one negative thing after. Don't do this. Take care of this. What are you doing? You're like in the matter of like about a, you know, whatever, half hour, there were like 30 comments, you know, that the parents said, they get all negative. He says, you know, the kid, you can't do that. You know, you have something negative to say, but first say something nice. Comment, a nice comment, this or whatever. You could say something negative, but shouldn't have any less comments. So that's what we see a lesson of Kodesh Baruch Hu. He didn't want to just tell him, don't eat from the tree. First, say something nice. You can eat from everything. Yeah, don't eat from the tree. One last interesting thing. At the end of the Sedra, leads into Parshas Noach. It says that Noach was Matzachin. Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. So he brings here that the reward of somebody who finds favor in the eyes of Hashem is Hashem does unbelievable chasadim for him, miracles for him. He brings a very interesting Ben Yoyada in the third parak of Maseches Tainis. Brings a maisa that he quotes from a sefer called Admas Kodesh. It's a parish on the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat. And he brings the following maisa. He says there was two Yidden, and they were partners, business partners, and so they used to buy merchandise together and sell, you know, and profit, and split the profits. So when they went into business, the agreement was that they all the profits that they generate, they split 50-50. But anything that one of the partners finds, like a metzia, right, that he finds, you don't have to share, you can keep. Like metzias, you keep only what they generate, profits they generate, you have to split. Okay. So one thing they bought, they got some guy was selling, he was going under, whatever, and he sold a whole huge supply of olive oil. Oh, many kegs of casks of olive oil. So fine. So the partners call them Reuven and Shimon, right? They bought together this olive oil. And Reuven had room in his by his house in his storage area, and they decided to store it by Reuven, which they did. What happens? So one day Reuven's wife goes into the storage area for something, to get something, and where all this huge amount of oil is stored, and she noticed that one of the kegs of oil had a hole in it, and it was leaking. But what was astonishing was that the oil was leaking out of this hole, but it remained full. The contents of the cask remained full, as in the oil was leaking out. Miracle. So she saw it was like a tremendous amount of oil on the ground, but it was still full. So she said, heck, she took, got some kalim, and she started filling it up with the leaking oil. And another kli, another kli, another kli, just kept filling up these kalim. It's right in the nach, right in Malachim, with Eisha Sovadje, you know. The oil didn't stop. It's coming to fill more and more, you know, filling up one kli after another. And that's what she did. As it happened, it was, there's so much oil that he brings down that it was enough oil to last 14 years. That's how much oil there was. They were to mefarnes the family for 14 years. However, why did he bring? He's brought this as that he asked the Shaila from the Admas Kodesh. The person asked, and that is, who gets this oil? Right, because again, the deal was that anything they profit, like they generate, you know, a business, they split 50-50, Reuben and Shimon. However, anything somebody finds, they get to keep. So Shaila is this oil that came, is that considered a find? You know, this woman found it, Reuben's wife found it, this came out of nowhere, you know, it was a find. Or, since it was generated from the oil which they had bought together to sell, maybe that's not considered a fine. Maybe they have to split. Anyway, that was the Shaila. And not to leave you hanging, the Admas Kodesh that the Ben Yoyada brought down, he paskined that it has the din of a metziah, and therefore Reuben gets to keep, him and his wife get to keep all the oil that was found. That was the psak. However, the Ben Yoyada himself brings others that paskin not like him, and say in fact that it's considered part of the profits, and they have to split. So the maisa ends up being a machloika sechro. So we should all be zochet to find favor in the eyes of Hashem, and we in turn be zochet to many, many nisim, and Bikr be Vias Gold Tzedek, Vimhira Vyamenu.